My name is Helen. I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlanta Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Michael C. and Sue, have the list of such groups and their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to you in your recovery or understanding. Chris will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic. A preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Jennifer will read the steps.
Hi, my name is Jennifer, and I'm an alcoholic. Hello. The 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs.
And we have Liz to read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Liz. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those who they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Maureen.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Andrew. Thank you very much. My name is Maureen. I'm an alcoholic. Maureen Roberts, by the way. I wanted to thank Peggy and Van. Actually, Peggy was the first person when I came in here, and she said, welcome home. And when I'm in an AA room, I know that I'm home. My home is like in my heart, in my soul, I'm an alcoholic. And that's really what I wanted to let people know here is that, you know, how I came in here was very fortuitous. I wanted to blame everyone else for my alcoholism. I really thought because I grew up with a bunch of Irish drunks, you know, from Ohio in a working class neighborhood, that, you know, I was just a product of my environment, and I wanted to blame everybody else. And the truth is, you know, I was born an alcoholic, and that's what I do. I drink, and I drank a lot. I used to drink like a man. I would drink men like totally under the table. I mean, you know, you pick the biggest guy in the room, and I would say, "Come here, you know, you think you can drink, honey? Let me show you." I mean, this is when I was a teenager. I mean, I was, you know. I was, you know, 15, and I grew up surrounded by sports and, you know, a lot of, strong personalities, a lot of big personalities. And when I came to New York, I found out what big personalities are really all about. And I became one of those women that you saw at the right parties, you know, with the guy on my arm and looking good on the outside and not letting you know that I had no furniture, 5 months behind on the rent, which I have a lot of shame about, crawling through the garbage because I didn't want my landlord to see me. And that's kind of like where my alcoholism took me. And, of course, I was climbing through the garbage with a really great outfit on, you know. You know, of course, you know, like stepping through, you know, and that was really important for me to always look good and sound good. And, I came, my sobriety date is March 1st, 1991. And how I got here was, wow. I really didn't think I was an alcoholic. I always surrounded myself with people that drank more than me, and who were in a lot more trouble than me. So I didn't have to, you know, I could still, say that I wasn't an alcoholic. And that really worked for a while. You know, it did. It worked for a while. And, I was in a glamorous profession and that encouraged you to keep it together, but yet they wanted you to socialize and go out. And all the other, like, good girls would, you know, be drinking normally, you know, with their little champagne glasses and stuff. And then I would find my crew and then we'd go downtown and hit the clubs and, you know, really, really drink. And I mean, just one story after another. It's just, it was always the same story, you know. I did things I didn't want to do. I hung out with people I didn't want to hang out with. And if you're anything like me, you have a lot of remorse about it, because I really didn't want to do those things. You know, I was like, if I felt like, you know, something had taken over my body. You know, I used to have this like crazy fantasy that I would have this like superwoman suit in, hanging in my closet that I could like take off and put on, you know. Like, that's real insanity. And I remember my apartment was all pink. I had like pink furniture, pink chairs, you know, I wore pink. I mean, I was like this whole like pink thing, you know. And I had pink parties on my roof, and everyone had to have their little pink dogs, and it was crazy. And, you know, big surprise, I'm an alcoholic. And, but my idea, thank you. I did a geographical. I left New York. I hooked up with, you know, the first guy that like smiled at me, and basically, and real nice guy, came from a good family, you know, real nice person. But he, you know, he didn't know what he was in for. I was a lot to handle, and needless to say that, you know, that relationship didn't work. But what did work was I finally hit my bottom. I was in Paris, and I came into AA looking for an Al-Anon meeting. And I want to thank my Al-Anon family who's here tonight, my sponsor, Irene. I just really can't believe, like, how amazing God is, because I really thought my denial was so high. You know, I just really didn't think I was an alcoholic. And I came in, there was, I walked up the stairs and the door opened, and back then, you know, there were like smokes billowing out, you know, and all these people turned around and they all had like smoky eyes, and they were all like really, you know, interesting, and they had crazy hair and stuff. And I was like, wow, I know these people. And, you know, and they were so wonderful and loving, and AA has always been like that. Like, my first sponsor, Big Book Nancy, said to me, you know, that's her name. She's wonderful. She said, you know, stick with the women. And, they really helped me. They helped me, I had no life. I had to go to, like, I went to 360 meetings in 90 days, you know. I really did, and that's what kept me sober. And I was an underliner and a highlighter, and I'm so glad to be back in that atmosphere where I feel so comfortable, like, being connected to people that are really connected to the book and the traditions and the steps, because the recovery is in the steps. And the relief is in the meetings. The relief from all the loneliness and the noises that sometimes still are in my head, you know. I mean, they dissipate over time, but I don't think they're ever going to go away. But I know that God has removed so many things in my life. It made my life so good. I'm married now. I have a wonderful, loving husband who is very patient and kind. And he's a good man. And I'm very fortunate. I never had a long-term loving relationship until I came into AA. I didn't even know what that was. My sponsors are teaching me how to be a loving wife and how to be a loving person in AA and how to be on time. What a concept, you know. I come from the world of fashion where if you're not late, you're not hips looking cool, you know. And I really learned that, you know, the meeting is before the meeting. There's a meeting before the meeting, and I'm a greeter, and I get to greet all of you, and I love that. It's been great. I get to see the same faces coming back every week, and I feel connected. I feel really connected, and I'm so glad that I was given that service. I have a lot of gratitude for service. You know, I can be in such a horrible mood or just full of fear, or, you know, not sure about what's going to go on with my life. You know, life is life. You know, sometimes it's scary. You know, I don't have a lot of money. I have a lot of things, but I, you know, there's certain things that I'm so glad that I came back after being away from AA for 5 years, and I don't recommend that for anyone. I came back through my sponsor, and Al-Anon brought me here to this meeting, and, you know, I was out there. I gained like 100 pounds. I was a crazy woman. I was horrible to my husband, and little by little, I came back here. I asked Heidi to be my sponsor. I feel like I have, like, the most amazing sponsor, and she's a light in my life, and I just feel like I have days now that are so rich and full and amazing, and I'm getting to know all of you again, and I just want to be of service and to help other people and live with God. I really am enjoying God in my life now. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is David.
Hi, I'm David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
It sure is a privilege and an honor to speak in front of a group like this. This is my home group. My sobriety date is May 17th of 2000, and my sponsor is Mark P., and I am living in steps 10, 11, and 12. Like I said, it's such a privilege to be able to speak to you all, not only as a group, but as a fellowship of AA, because I could speak every night of a week, every night of the year, and I still could not give back everything that I've gotten out of AA. The fellowship means that much to me in terms of really changing my life, turning my life around, and offering me the chance to be happy and usefully whole, and to pass that on to other people. It's just a tremendous opportunity. So what I was like, I was really lost. I had no idea who I was or what the purpose of my life was. And that really defined my alcoholism, I think, more than the drinking. The drinking for me was a small part of the whole package. It was the attitudes, being restless, irritable, and discontent, being completely baffled by other people, and unable to have anything like a healthy relationship with anyone, be it a family member, a spouse, a coworker, my boss. I was always having difficulty and never really understanding why, when I was trying so hard to please you, that the harder I tried, the more unhappy you got with me. So I went through my childhood and adolescence feeling uncomfortable, like I did not fit in, like there was a meeting every morning before school that I wasn't invited to, where everyone got together and figured out what to say and what to do. I discovered alcohol, and for a long time I used alcohol as a treatment for my alcoholism, and it took away all those uncomfortable feelings for me. I felt like I belonged. I felt like part of the group, and I felt like that I could get along with you. I could get along with the opposite sex. I could feel comfortable in my own skin. But I also knew really early on that my relationship with alcohol was different than most people. Even my peers who liked to party, they didn't have that same urgent need that I did to get the drink and to get to the bar. And early on, I had my moment in the Winchester Cathedral that Bill talks about in his book, when my mother, I was like 14 or 15, and I was sitting in our living room with what could only be described as a hangover.
And my mother looked at me, and she knew what was going on. And she said, you know, you want to be careful because there's a history in your family of people who have problems with alcohol. She didn't really understand the full ramifications, I don't think, of what that meant. So I went through high school and I went through college trying as best I could to manage my drinking, but I was continually getting into problems. I was blacking out. It wasn't until I came into the rooms that I realized that blacking out is a clinical symptom of alcoholism. That's not normal behavior. If you're a newcomer, if you're in this room, and when you drink, you can't remember what you did, that's a problem. That's not normal. And that happened repeatedly, and it at first it was fun. People would say, wow, you know, you were so crazy last night, and I actually enjoyed hearing what I did because I would do things that I wouldn't have the nerve to do when I was sober. But then it got ugly, and I started doing things that weren't so nice, and people all of a sudden were angry at me when they were telling me about what I did the night before. So I tried my best to manage my drinking. Had incident, you know, putting cars into ditches, coming out of blackouts with the campus police shining a light in my face, you know, meetings with the disciplinary board at school, all that kind of stuff. And after college, I met a woman and I wanted to settle down, and she told me that that's okay, but I would have to do something about my drinking because I scared her when I got drunk. She got really scared because she said I became a different person. She did not know who I was. So that straightened me out for a little while. And as I said, I tried to continue to manage my drinking. But, you know, it says in the first step that we were powerless. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. It doesn't say that our drinking had become unmanageable. And that's really what happened to me, because as hard as I tried to manage my drinking, my life became more and more unmanageable. I had difficulties, as I said, with other people, difficulties with my relationship with my wife, difficulties at work. I was in danger of losing my job that I had worked so hard to get. And I was scared. But fortunately for me, and it talks about this in the book, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, as well as the 12 and 12, that some of us are lucky enough to come here before we go as far as other people do, and I'm one of the lucky ones. I consider myself scarcely more than a potential alcoholic because we were able to raise the bar. And I through the intervention of a psychotherapist, I came to the rooms, and I still had some defiance. I was not willing to admit out loud anyhow that I was an alcoholic. And when I came to my first AA meeting at the Mustard Seed on 37th Street, I raised my hand when they asked if there was anyone here for the first time, and I said, yes, I'm here for the first time, partly out of defiance because I was so cool about the whole thing that I wasn't ashamed. I was just here really to audit the course. And towards the end of the meeting, I was listening to everyone share, and towards the end of the meeting, the speaker looked at me and asked if I had anything that I would like to contribute to the meeting. And I said, well, you know, I'm here really at the suggestion of my therapist and my wife and my boss and all this stuff. And I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what it's all about. And he said, okay. He nodded and he said, so when was your last drink? And without skipping a beat, I said, it was a week ago Tuesday. And he said, well, you know, if you ask a normal person that question, they would probably have to think about it. And that was like a little pinprick in the big black heavy velvet curtain that I put up in front of my alcoholism, and a little shaft of light shone through. And it says in the first step in the 12 and 12, it says that when one alcoholic puts in the mind of another alcoholic the true nature of his malady, that person can never be the same again. And that's what happened to me. And I started going to more meetings because I wanted to learn more, and I became really hungry for recovery. I got the sense that you all had the answer to what had been bothering me my whole life, my uncomfortability, my lack of self-esteem. And I started with a sponsor, and I really wanted to work through the steps. And I was able to hook up with another sponsor, Mark, who is very focused on the program of recovery that's outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I started going through those steps, I started changing, and it wasn't always comfortable. I had a lot of work to do on myself. I had to do an inventory, which I was very upset about. I was not looking forward to that. I had to share it with Mark. And then I had to clean up the wreckage of my past. I had to go through and eyeball to eyeball, make amends to people that I had hurt. But, you know, doing that process, lo and behold, I started to get self-esteem, because how can you possibly have self-esteem when you have all these character defects that you aren't willing to face? And then the real miracle started to happen, because then I could take it on the road, as Mark puts it. I was able to practice these principles not only in the AA community and passing it on to my sponsees and passing it on to newcomers at meetings, but I was able to practice the principles at home and at work. And my life today is so much better than it was when I came in 6 years ago. I have the respect of my colleagues. My boss actually likes me today. And things at home are 100% better than they were. Actually much better than they were when I was in recovery, because there was a period there when things were pretty dicey at home. But when I started practicing the 12 steps at home, things got a lot better. I got humble, I got real, and I stopped taking myself so seriously, and everything got a lot better at home. I have the opportunity to be a father to my children that I could never be if I had not come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, it's all a great thing. I mean, it's really so simple as to say that I've been drunk and I've been sober. And let me tell you, sober is a lot better. And to keep it that way, I've just got to do a few simple things. Don't drink, go to meetings. Those are two good things to start with, but I got to do more. I got to call my sponsor on a daily basis. I have to read literature. I have to go to, I have to do my service commitment, at this group. I have to, continue to make amends. I have to pray and meditate, but all that's great stuff, because it helps to quell those voices that are still inside my head. But fortunately today I have the answer through you, Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you so much.
Bulletin board. Our main speaker tonight is Lorna.
I wonder what Wilbur did. Good evening, everybody. My name is Lorna, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm very delighted to be here. And, you know, I came up the road, walked up Park Avenue, or down Park Avenue, and past 62nd Street, where all that houses exploded yesterday. And I thought to myself, my God, you know, that's the end result of a resentment. I mean, that's what it can look like. And not only that, not only does one bring the house down, but one brings the house down on top of oneself. And he didn't get to die, you know. He got what a mess. I mean, what a lesson it was. It was incredible. Anyway, you know, I've been sitting here for the last half hour, and I want to thank Maureen and David for their share. And I've been thinking and praying, please help me, you know, to say something and something to come through. And I never really know what I'm going to say, but I do want to say that this is a very poignant time of year for me, because this is the time of year I came in. And I came in the year of 1976, and it was just like this. It was hot and humid. And I often describe my coming into the program as sort of like I was a plane that belly flopped along the runway for a long time. You know, and my undercarriage got all scraped, and the wings were torn off, and there were passengers strewn across the runway, and, you know, underwear hanging from trees and bushes and things. But It was just mucky. It wasn't some glorious bottom. It was just mucky. And this time of year, my anniversary is August 11th, and this was the time of year where I was scraping along the runway, and just it was getting muckier and muckier and muckier. But I was coming into AA. But I want to actually start my talk tonight with how I very often end it, because something very major, in a very small thing happened, but it has major significance. And, you know, I think very often newcomers, I was amazed at the amount of people that are going to celebrate a year, and this group certainly supports newcomers a lot, that get this idea, especially in a group like this, that sobriety is very rah, 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 and that if one doesn't feel rah, rah, rah all one's sobriety, one automatically thinks one isn't doing it right. I've done it wrong. There's something wrong with me. You know, I've got 8 years of sobriety and I'm feeling terrible and I don't really like meetings and I can't stand my sponsor. And, you know, they always say if you love your sponsor, you've got the wrong sponsor. And, this feeling of, it's not all like this, and Alcoholics Anonymous and sobriety calls to us to tread the high road. It calls to us to go higher, not to, sobriety is one thing, yeah, there's go. But it calls to us to take it into a bigger, wider, finer, more sparkly kind of dimension. And the price for that is very often very painful. And, you know, Susan's here and she's often been to meditation retreats I've given. So she's heard me say this before that, you know, every one of us at some time in our lives, and especially in our lives as members of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're called to be the sensing rod of AA. We're called to be the sensing rod of how will it go. Each one of us is the program. Each one of us is Alcoholics Anonymous. And every so often, every one of us gets that opportunity. And we have it so incredibly demonstrated with Bill Wilson when he was standing in that lobby in Akron, Ohio. And, you know, he was hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. And he heard the bar down the other end of the lobby. And it was like, you know, Lois isn't around. No one's here to see me. The business had gone south. He was all alone. And I'm sure heaven watched him and heaven held its breath. Which way will he go? You know, I come from a Christian tradition, and I love the idea of the Annunciation when the angel came to Mary, and the angel didn't say, hey, listen, sweetheart, you're going to be the mother of, you know, the Son of God, and that's it. Just invited her, and heaven held its breath. Which way was she going to go? Was she going to say, look, I'm awfully busy, I really don't want to take this on at the moment? Or was she going to agree to it? And, you know, and Bill Wilson there. And based on what he did, all of us are sitting here tonight. And I'm sober almost 30 years because that man turned in another direction and went towards the church directory. And every so often, each one of us is called, am I going to cheat on my expense account? Everyone else does it. And I need a little extra cash, you know. Am I going to serve alcohol at home? I mean, after all, it's Christmas or my daughter's wedding or something. And, you know, AA is wonderful when I'm at 60th and Park. But this is the real world, you know. This is the real world. How is it going to be? And heaven holds its breath. How are we going to claim? Are we going to live it in the real world? So many years ago, some of you know I was very friendly with Mother Teresa. And she was dreadfully ill, and I dashed off to Calcutta. We thought she was going to die at that time. And I was taken from the airport to her hospital room. Now, here's Mother Teresa
in bed, and at that time we thought dying. And she was in a very, very narrow room. It wasn't much wider, actually, than this aisle here. And a tiny bed. And I, very shortly after I got there, a young Indian priest came in to say Mass. And they set up the table at the bottom of the bed as the altar. And he started saying Mass, facing Mother, who's in bed, propped up on her pillows. Now, it's not lost on me at all that I'm, you know, in the hospital room with Mother Teresa dying, and there's the priest saying Mass. So anyway, it comes time for communion, and he comes around the side of the bed, and he's holding the chalice, and he dips the host in the wine, and Mother pushes herself up from the pillows, and very, you know, very serenely and with great attention, she takes the wine, the host, on her lips, on her tongue. And then he turns to me, and I, this thought, you know, it went like this, but it was, oh God, not here. Don't let me have to make a fuss here. I mean, I was about 17, 18 years sober at the time, and I thought, you know, please, you know, this saint is dying in bed next to me. Let me just move over it this one time. You know, why do I always have to bring the attention on to myself? Why does it have, just take it this one time, Lorna. After all, it's the blood of Christ. Don't even think of it as being wine or booze or anything. You know, it's this sacramental liquid. And so I'm standing there, and all of a sudden, all of you went before me. And all of the people that had gone before me, and Bill Wilson standing in that lobby in his shabby old suit, and all the people that have tried and gone out the doors and come back, and what you don't see with me standing here tonight, what you don't see is behind me, there's a river of humanity. There's a river of suffering humanity, some not even born, that held their breath. What will she do? Which way will she go? Will Alcoholics Anonymous be a little more, or will it be a little less? And I just said to him, no wine, just give me the host. I mean, I didn't know quite the formal words to say. And he's a young priest, and he was confused and that. And anyway, finally, he gave me the plain host, and he gave this dripping wine-soaked host to the sister standing next to me. And we're all crammed in, you know, like this. And then he moves around the other side of the bed to give communion to the other two sisters who were squashed on the other side of the bed. And while he was around, and I'm standing there, you know, when we do the right thing, we don't necessarily feel, oh, now that feels great, you know. And heaven sure is happy with me, and Alcoholics Anonymous is moving forward because I did the right thing. No, I stood there feeling really awkward, like I've pulled attention onto myself, and just I wasn't feeling holy. I wasn't felt like I took the blood of the body of Christ, or none of that. And Mother's hand came across the covers, and she took my hand, and she leaned into me, and she said, well done, you must continue to protect your precious gift. And, you know, I have to, could you pass me my water, would you mind? Thank you. And I have to constantly remember that I have a precious gift, and sometimes it requires a price. Now, the other evening, I took a friend of mine out for dinner on Sunday evening, and it was a birthday celebration for him. And I took him to a very nice restaurant, and I've never been to a fancy restaurant with him. Never gone. We've always sort of gone to a coffee shop or anything like that. And I have a suspicion about his drinking. But he has. I've never seen him with a drink in his hand. Never. because he knows I'm in the program, and we talk about, we're both on very intense spiritual paths, and we talk about AA and the 12 steps a lot. So anyway, when I sat down, I said, you know, shall we get would you like a large bottle of Pellegrino, and we'll share that. So he said yes, and he said, and Lorna, I would like just an itsy bitsy glass of red wine. And you know when people start talking about itsy bitsy, you know they have problems. So I said to him, and this is where the rubber meets the road, I said to him, yeah, absolutely fine, but Andrew, I never buy alcohol, and neither do I pay for it. And you know, I thought about it a while before I said it, but that feeling, you know, I made a covenant with God when I came into AA that I would have nothing. I would take the first step extremely deeply and in an extreme way, and that I would sink into the first step. You know, that alcohol in any form would not pass my lips, my threshold, my life, my purse in any way whatsoever. I would not have truck with it because I'm powerless over it. And any time I make allowances for it, I will eventually make those allowances in myself. So, you know, I said to him, I don't buy it. And here I am buying him his birthday dinner. And then I had to take it a step further. And he said, oh, all right. He said, but I'll buy it. I'll pay for it. And I sat there in this very smart restaurant. And he handed me the $6. Now, what did I need with $6? I didn't need the $6. The meal was very expensive. But it was just that act and that feeling of embarrassment and cringing to stand by my principles. And what was like, I'm almost 30 years, and on the eve of my 30 years, was I going to say, oh, in this case it's different? And believe me, I wanted to. Believe me, I was paying for it with a credit card, and it's like, oh, what difference does it make? I won't notice it. It's not like I have to open the wine or anything. It doesn't matter. But it felt tacky. It didn't feel cool. It didn't feel New York. It didn't feel, you know, to have someone that I'm buying their birthday dinner for give me the money for the booze that they're drinking. And, you know, I've managed to do it for 30 years almost, and I feel I didn't sell out. I didn't sell out, but it's not easy. So I just want to say that because, you know, it's not always, it's doing great big things in our lives are often much easier than these tiny little, you know, refinements. You know, what's the difference between an Armani suit and something you get off, you know, somewhere else? I don't know what the other makes are from tea. But it's the cut, it's the refinement, it's the finesse of it. That's why, I haven't seen The Devil Wears Prada yet, but I'm sure it talks about that. Anyway, you know, thank you. At this, I have 15 minutes left, but I've said exactly what I wanted to say. So the rest is just fill in. And at this time of the year, you know, as I said, it's a very poignant time, and my bottom was actually, I'll talk about it like this. I had this very highfalutin job. I was the first woman art auctioneer in America at Sotheby's, and I loved to drink on an empty stomach. And I liked to fast all day, and I would, in those days, Sotheby's was on Madison Avenue and 76th Street, and Bemelman's Bar was right across the street in the Carlisle Hotel. And I'd love to go across the street with my associates and have a drink on an empty stomach. You know, that first vodka and orange juice, woof! And I was there one evening. My marriage had broken up. My husband had finally walked out the door. I thought it was the most fascinating thing he'd ever done, and it really caught my attention. And I wanted him back desperately. And some friend of mine just said to me that she'd gone to a meeting of Al-Anon, and all the women sounded just like me. So anyway, I went to this meeting of Al-Anon, and it was suggested that one go to open AA meetings. So I researched, and I the very next night, and I knew that there was a meeting at Lenox Hill at 7:30, I think it was, on Thursday, and it was an open meeting. So that evening, I'm in Bemelman's Bar, and it's almost 7:30. And I said to my friends, ooh, it's almost 7:30. I'm going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll be back. And I toddled up the road to Lenox Hill, and I went in and I sat down, and, you know, it was a meeting where people like me who were not alcoholics could attend. So I listened. This chap got up on the stage, and he said, hello, my name's Don, and I'm an alcoholic. And I remember thinking to myself, well, good God, we don't all want to know. I mean, you know, surely there's some things you keep to yourself. So don't you have any shame? But the thing was that I was riveted to this guy's story, fascinated with it. And I think that that is what qualifies me as an alcoholic. I think if one comes to these meetings and one finds it interesting to hear stories about how people, you know, threw up on their clients and ended up in jail or contemplated suicide or murder or decided to blow up the house so the wife couldn't get it or, you know, we find that sort of thing fascinating, you know, there's something not quite right with us. And not only did I find it fascinating, do I find it fascinating after all this time, I like to go to coffee shops afterwards and talk about it and get on the phone and talk about it. I find it endlessly interesting. Anyway, after Don, two other fellows got up and told equally as interesting stories. And after this, I went back to Bemelman's Bar. And what did I know about anonymity? I knew nothing. I thought it was a jolly good job you were anonymous. You should be, after all the things you got up to. But I said to my friends, oh my God, you'd never guess who is an alcoholic. And I told them all details about their story and all sorts of things. Anyway, that was my introduction to AA. And that was sort of in June of 76. And by August, I'd gone to London on a business trip. And I was at a very, very smart dinner dance with all Sotheby's clients and heads of museums and Lord and Lady Duwar Diddy and God knows who and that. And I'm in a gown and all dressed up. And while they're dancing, I'm going from table to table, emptying their glass into mine. And I knew there was something, my behavior didn't quite go with my outfit. But I didn't know what it was that was, you know, couldn't quite put it together. Anyway, I think heaven was looking out and going, oy vey, you know, when's this one going to? But in August 1st of 1976, I ended up, I was sitting on the steps of the Metropolitan Museum of Art on a summer Sunday afternoon. And you've all seen that scene. You know, life was going on all around me. There were people with people, friends, and people going in the museum. What time is it now? Good. People going in and out of the museum. And I knew that it was life. I knew that it was something that echoed something I remembered, but I couldn't get to it. It was like I was looking at life through a thick plastic window. And you know, up until that moment, I'd never felt so lonely in all my life. And that was a morning I'd gotten up and I'd fixed myself a carafe of vodka and orange juice. And I'd been drinking all day. And I'd had lunch with a man I was going out with. I was devastated about the husband, but I was going out with this other chap I wanted to marry. You know how mucky it all gets in the end. And he was a bit of a cad. I mean, we're never going out with the cream of the crop when we're coming into the program. So, and usually not for the first couple of years either. So, in my case, it was okay. I don't know about anyone else. But Anyway, I stood up and I didn't know what to do with myself. And this thought came to me, go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to a meeting. I went to the Moravian Church at Lexington Avenue and 30th Street. And a woman spoke, and she was sort of my build, actually. And she looked ancient. She was probably as old as I am now. But she had broken capillaries. I remember this on her face. And she looked like, you know, rough. Used, rough. And she told my story up to where I was at that very moment. And then she went on for another 15 years. And I got to see coming attractions. I got to see, that's me. I mean, it hit me. There was no difference between her and myself. There was just a matter of moments, 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 which add up to years and years. And you know, boom, you're 20, boom, you're 30, boom, you're 40, boom. And now I'm sober. And now I'm sober half my life. I'm 60 years old. And, you know, it's gone. And so I got in that, I had a grace in that moment to see myself down the path and how fast it was coming at me. And I said to myself over and over again, my God, I drink. It's drinking. I drink. And the thought was so terrible, I ran out onto Lexington Avenue into the nearest bar and knocked back another one. And but I was across the threshold. I was in AA. I didn't understand it. I didn't know what to do. I thought for the longest time I'd nipped it in the bud. I thought I didn't need this program quite like the rest of you because I was young. In those days, 30 was young to be coming in. And Maureen said, you know, I didn't know I was an alcoholic. Of course we don't know we're alcoholic. I mean, that's part of the disease. It's not a fault that we don't know. That knowing that we're alcoholics is something that comes with sobriety. It's not something we know instantly. And anyway, 10 days after that, I was in Washington on business. And I was at a business dinner. And wine was poured. And I didn't know enough to say no thank you. I didn't know. I thought Alcoholics Anonymous, and listen up to this, because it's summertime and there's a lot of seductive looking, refreshing drinks out there. I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was learning to resist alcohol. I thought it was learning to be around alcohol and be cool. Like, no, 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 it doesn't bother me if you drink. No, 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 you go ahead. It's fine. Ladies and gentlemen, I am not in here to learn how to be cool, to learn that, to say, no, it doesn't bother me. I did not have a platonic relationship with alcohol. We had an incestuous, involved dance. We tangoed together. And I don't, you know, but I thought it was about resisting. And I resisted it through the main course and the salad and the dessert. And then they started serving cheese and whatever, and this goblet of wine started to talk to me. And it said to me, look, Lorna, these other people at the table aren't weeping and telling each other, you know, inappropriate details of their personal lives. And they're not laughing too loudly. They're dressed appropriately. Why can't you be like them? I'm not against you. I'm on your side. Don't you always feel better when we're together? Why do you always have to guzzle? Why can't you be like them? And I took the goblet and I took a sip of wine. And my last drink was that sip of wine, because that sip sent my soul into total terror. And the terror was being separated from you. I'm not always in love with my sobriety. I'm deeply shallow. And I don't wake up every morning with this glorious feeling of, oh, I'm sober, how wonderful. But I want to tell you that the thing that was drilled into me, drilled into me, drilled into me, was develop a love affair with Alcoholics Anonymous. If you fall in love with AA, it will help you through the dry periods. It'll help you through the 8 years, the 12 years, the 20 years. It'll help you through so that you can have a long-term, glorious relationship. And, you know, I have a lot to share. I have a lot to say. But it's my time. And, you know, my life is extraordinary. I've been on a diet of a meeting a day my entire sobriety, except if I've been traveling, and I travel. I spend 2 months a year of my life in silence. And, you know, I just have a very abundant, incredible life. But it's not pain-free, and it's not angst-free. And I'm still cantankerous and fiery and irritated, and was demonstrated when I walked in here this evening with one of the members, and I apologize. What has happened is that my life has become bigger so that I can hold all that I am. I'm not going to stop being impatient or irritable. Those things won't go away. But they don't last as long. They don't wreck my life like they did. And, you know, I'm one of many in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm very important. And each one of us must feel that way, because we hold within us the chalice and the crucible of an incredible message. And Mother Teresa loved AA, and she... Mother could help every form of suffering human, but she couldn't help the alcoholic, because she didn't have the words of everlasting life that you and I have. And those words are, I know how you feel. Let me tell you what happened to me. So you and I are the owners and the stewards for our lifetimes. And it's not, we do not do this for ourselves alone. It's not so that our lives will be glorious. It's so that we'll take this message and send it out in the world. We don't want the sobriety of Bill Wilson. We want, more. So thank you so much for coming to meetings. Thank you, Vince, for asking me to speak. Thank you for all the service you do. Thank you for putting money in the basket, and for keeping the alcohol out of your houses, and for keeping a scrupulous life. Because if you weren't here, I'd have absolutely nowhere to go. So thank you for your sobriety.